Heute wird es richtig cool, denn heute habe ich Dan Harvey im Interview, der der Head Marketer hinter Passion.io ist und es erfolgreich in den letzten Jahren geschafft hat, dieses Softwareunternehmen auf über 10 Millionen pro Jahr Umsatz zu bringen. Und wir springen wirklich in alles rein. Ich frage ihn über die besten Funnels aus, wir reden über die besten Ad-Creatives, wir reden darüber, wie er es wirklich geschafft hat, das Unternehmen so schnell zu skalieren. Und vor allem reden wir darüber, was man beachten muss, wenn man ein Softwareunternehmen erfolgreich skalieren will. Wenn du also ein bisschen an Marketing interessiert bist und vor allem auch an Performance-Marketing, dann solltest du dir diese Folge unbedingt bis zum Ende anhören. Ich habe selber fleißig mitgeschrieben und jetzt wünsche ich dir ganz viel Spaß mit der neuen Episode. I already had like Matthias on my podcast and we talked about a lot of the technical side, which is interesting, but I think as a fellow marketer, I'm a little bit more interested into the marketing side and growing a software company to 10 million. I think that's a huge accomplishment that you achieved. And I think there is a lot more room or a lot of more growing that you want to see in the future. Do we want to start with like, what are you actually doing with Passion.io to give a little bit background and then we jump into like marketing?
Yeah, sure. So Passion.io is a software as a service and we help creators to launch their own mobile app and we help them to grow and monetize their audience with that.
Yeah. Oh, they're perfect pitch. Love it. So I think at some point for everybody who wants to have the backstory, I'm a little bit selfish today, they can jump into the interview with Matthias, because I would love to know, Dan, how you started the project. And I think you said before that you were very performance based, that you everything most of the time scaled the company through performance marketing. How did you get started with a project like that? How did you came up with your funnels? How did you came up with your ads and stuff like that? Can you talk us through like the strategic approach that you took to get to maybe to the first 1,000 clients that you had or customers?
Yeah, I'll start with how we got the first customer, because like that's always the, you know, that's a huge challenge. Yeah, his name was Preston. We called him the King. And I remember the moment we acquired the first customer. I think for people listening or watching, like the mistake I see a lot of people make is that they don't focus on how to monetize the thing. They just think about the thing. And the reality is that you need money to make the thing good. So whatever project it is you're working on, and no matter how big it gets, the only way you can really make it bigger and better is by making money and using that money to improve the thing, especially software. Software is extremely expensive to build, and there's a reason why many of the biggest software companies in the world have raised billions with a B in funding, and that's because they need that money to make it good enough that people are willing to use it. So to answer your question, we thought very, very early, almost before the software existed, to be honest, about how do we actually sell this thing. And we started first as an agency where we said, okay, we don't have any software, so let's first just like do our idea as a service and use like other tools. And then we said, okay, done for you isn't very scalable, let's do done with you. And we did like a coaching program and taught other people how to do this. Again, not really using our tools because we were still building them in the background. And then we launched the software and that we were able to build with the money we generated from that first step. So where do you want me to go into like how do we actually build the software funnel, or do you want me to even go before that and talk about the agency and the coaching stuff?
Love the software funnel. I think this is the part Matthias covered. I think the agency part very good before, but to start and launch the software funnel would be very interesting, especially what you're saying. I think a lot of people think about the software and how it does look like, and that you already think about the numbers and that it should be profitable and stuff like that. Yeah, I would love to hear that side of the story.
Okay, yeah, let's do it. So, the first thing is no one knew who we were when we first started, which is the situation most people are in when they first start something. And we didn't have a lot of money. And so we had to, and that's also the situation most people are in when they first start. So no one knows who you are. You don't have any money. Like, what do you do? What I would not recommend to do is like come up with some idea on how you're going to market this thing and then like execute on that. Much smarter is realize that other people have marketed stuff before and they've figured out what works and what doesn't work, and find something that is both working. You can figure out why it's working, and you can model. You have the resources to model. So back then we found ClickFunnels was running back then a webinar.
He called it
the perfect webinar. Russell Brunson, one of the founders of ClickFunnels. So it was working. We could figure out why it was working because he also teaches courses on how to make it work. So that was easy. Yeah. And then we could replicate it because all you need to build a webinar is like a laptop, basically. And so that was our very first funnel. It was like modeled word for word, slide for slide on something that was already proven to work.
And did you have like no customer at all? You had like this proven funnel of ClickFunnels. Okay, we should do a webinar. You got all excited. You're lining out this webinar. And did you test it in somewhere like to a warm audience? Or was there really a moment like ads are going online, you have this funnel and the first client is signing up?
We had no warm audience. It was the running ads thing. Look, I wouldn't necessarily say that everyone should start like that because what I've come to realize in the years that have passed, and also ads have got more expensive, is actually it's really good to build up an organic audience first because you can for free you can figure out what's resonating with people and what's not. But I didn't think about it back then. I also didn't have like patience, I think, to do that. And we didn't have much money, but we had a bit because we built up this agency. So we had at least enough money to start running ads. So we ran webinars on a Thursday. The very first one was like 6 p.m. on whatever Thursday it was. We ran ads Monday until Wednesday, until Thursday at like 3 p.m. And then we tried to get people to come to this webinar. I think we generated like 30 leads. I think 10 people showed up or something in that region. And then I did this whole 2-hour webinar. And then at the end, I realized that everyone had left after like 5 minutes. So like the...
Oh, really?
Yeah. So the 1 hour 55 of me like jumping around being like crazy. There was zero attendees the whole time.
Shit.
So that was my first one. I realized... The show up rate was actually worse. It wasn't like 10 out of 30. It was like, I don't know, 5 out of 50 or something. The show up rate was pretty bad. We realized that most of our customers were in the US and we needed no one was awake at 6 p.m. where I was in the world, which was in Berlin. So I had to do the next one on the following Thursday at 1 a.m. So 1 a.m. till 3 a.m. And I did that for, I think, 7 weeks in a row, making zero sales per week.
Seven weeks, but you were committed and going strong. And let's see.
Yeah, because it was like, what else are you going to do? It was a proven funnel that someone else is making work. And we wanted to succeed. And like the only way to not fail is to not give up, right?
And then week number 8 came around? Or?
Yeah, week number 8. And I can tell you it was like December 2018 and I was in a Christmas market. And I'd done the day before I'd done this 1 a.m. till 3 a.m., like this webinar number 8, whatever it was. And I was in a Christmas market with actually a couple of colleagues. And I was like, oh, we did the webinar yesterday. And I kept refreshing Stripe. And then it came in Preston, our very first customer, paid us $1,000. And we were jumping around in the Christmas market, going wild. We called him the king. We said we were going to like devote our lives to helping this guy like achieve all of his goals. And and it went from there.
That's crazy. How much experience did you have before with like online marketing? Did you do this stuff before, like with the agency? You had some experience, I would guess, on that level. But before that, did you have like, I don't know, studies in this part of field, or how did you came along with all that experience?
No, so my background is I'm a creator myself. I'm a musician, and I play the drums. And when I was 19, I dropped out of university to pursue my career as a musician, joined a band, did quite well, has an album in the charts in the UK, but still couldn't really make any money, or not enough in the end to live. And so after 4 years of touring the world, we couldn't make the numbers add up anymore, and we stopped doing it. And actually that was the thing that made me think, like, there's, you know, we had quite a lot of fans and we had like an album in the charts and whatever, but we still couldn't earn money. And I wanted to figure out why that was the case. And also, like, there was a lot of my friends who were in bands and whatnot who had the same problem. And I realized that what I've realized over the sort of 10 years that have passed since that is, most people don't have the tools, information, and mindset to make this stuff work. And that's the problem we're trying to solve with Passion. So as I was exploring that, I met my co-founder, Matthias. We thought, hey, wouldn't it be cool to create a platform where people can monetize their passion? And that's where it started. And like I said, the reason we started with an agency is because you don't need anything to start an agency. You just have to have... I just sent 1,000 emails to people who I thought would be a good fit to monetize their passion. And I said, you know, we will do this for you and we won't charge you anything. We'll just take a percentage. And we started there and we just learned on the job sort of thing.
That's really cool. And I think you're one of the cases that I heard from, like, in this German bubble, from transferring from an agency or also a coaching program to software. I think there are not a lot of people that are willing to do this step, because I think it takes a lot of complexity and money and I think a long-term horizon, but you did it. And it's really cool to see that it's possible to do this transformation. Yeah.
It's really hard.
And so you got,
sorry,
give us some of the stuff behind the scenes, because I can guess that software is pretty hard to start and grow, right?
Yeah, and honestly, like, what I've learned is, like, it's also not like every business model has pros and cons, and there's some great things about software, like really good margins, recurring revenue, high multiples on your valuation, easily exitable. A lot of, like, other kinds of businesses are harder to exit. So there's all sorts of reasons why software is a great business model, but there's a lot of downsides as well. It's like really expensive to build, really hard to do well. It moves extremely quickly and a bunch of other things. So an adoption is hard, like getting people to actually adopt it is difficult, because it's a DIY thing usually rather than a done for you thing, which is a lot easier to get people to adopt. The transition from agency to software as well is another one that's really hard, and it took us like years, because one thing is making money, the other thing is making no money and costing a lot of money, and then you have to try and, like, focus your time on the thing that's not making money, but you need to balance that,
because if you take your money,
and if you take your attention off the thing that's making money too much, it won't make money, right? And so this balance was very difficult.
So you've come a long way to make it happen, and it's really cool to see that it worked. Like, what did you learn along the way? Like, I think there is a misconception in the market, what you said, like, you're running ads, you're having a funnel, you have your offer, you have your core offer for maybe $1,000 or something. And I think a lot of people think that you make then a lot of money. But I think what we can, in most cases, can agree on, that if you go break even with that, you are totally fine. Was that also your case in your terms, that you tried to go break even with the funnel, or did you even make some money with it?
We aim to break even with the funnel upfront. I would say we're even now, like, taking some loss on the initial sale, partly because ads get more expensive and harder. Partly because we've scaled up a lot, so it gets more expensive. And partly because we have, of course, like a software business, we have lifetime value that we then make money down the line as well. But yeah, in general, it's very difficult today and will only get more difficult to make a performance marketing funnel break even or profitable. It's really tough.
Yeah. And the cool thing is, you said that this funnel is still live today, right? Like, after a couple of years now since you launched it, or right?
Yeah, we've done, so the webinar, we did 12 or 13 live versions. Then it was like converting well enough that we could automate it. And then we did 3 automated versions, and we're on the 3rd automated version. But this 3rd one has been live now for a couple of years, maybe 2.5 years or so. And it's making sales every single day. Like we're spending 4-5K a day on running ads to that funnel, and it's like working still.
Oh, that's interesting. Oh, I gotta ask that. Is there a difference in terms of content between a live webinar and an automated webinar?
What do you mean by content? Like, do you mean like
in terms of the presentation, did you adapt anything from the one that you did like 13 times in a row, or did you take the same presentation and just put it onto an automated webinar software?
Give or take, it's the same. When it's live, you of course can interact with the chat. We run it on EverWebinar, so it's like a kind of feels like live thing, which I don't love, to be honest, but it does work, and that's always the challenge. But we have live chat on EverWebinar, which shows the chat that happens in real time with other people watching that automated version, and also the historical chat that happened at that time. And so I still encourage a lot of engagement in the chat, even though it's automated.
Got it.
Because like people don't want to just like consume something, they want to like do something, and that gives a lot more engagement.
Ooh, that's really good to hear, because I'm also like, I'm in a mode right now to do once a week a live training to get the presentation right and stuff like that. But I'm always in the situation that I have the feeling that people are getting smarter and smarter, and they realize if they are like in an automated webinar or not. I really, especially on LinkedIn, I think the people that are on there, they are so smart that you can't fool them anymore. But the same thing is, I think if you frame it maybe right and you say, hey, this is like a recording or something, maybe you can still get this stage that you don't have to do it every week, but you put it on like autoplay and can relax a little bit. But that's interesting to hear that this interaction is also an incremental part of the success, I guess, right?
Yeah. What we're exploring right now, and it's not proven, so take this with a pinch of salt, is what if we open up an automated like a video that we say it's not live, but we only open it up for a limited time. And so because the reason why live works or fake live is the same reason that you watch a 90-minute football game, but you only watch the highlights if it's happened already. No one watches something that's that long if it's not happening right now, or a lot fewer people do. And so if there's no urgency to watch it, people just don't. And that's why we're thinking about opening it up with a deadline. And yeah, we'll see.
Yeah. So this is the one funnel that is still working today. And that is really cool to hear, because I think, Dan, a lot of people are, I don't know, they would do a presentation or webinar for 3 times and it doesn't work. And they're like, okay, webinars doesn't work for our offer or doesn't work for our company. Next to the next thing we do, I don't know, a challenge funnel or something. And that is really cool to hear from you. You did it like 7 times. Yeah, 7 times in a row with like paid. I would be like, phew, that's a long way to get it right. But you also have over the years a second funnel, right? That is even more interesting today, or bringing even more people into your software company.
Yeah, I mean, we're a bit unique. It depends on who's listening, if different types of products. But as a software company, of course, some people want to get like educated first, and that's the webinar. Other people just want to see like the product and do it. And so we have what we call the SaaS funnel, which is just direct to the product. And that drives more scale than the webinar, and typically also drives higher quality customers, because our webinar is targeted for beginners, and therefore you have a lot of people who don't yet have like an audience or content to put in their app. But the software funnel is usually bringing in people who've got a little bit more experience before they join.
Yeah. Ah, that's cool to hear. And like messaging in terms of like ads over the years, did you have like observed what kind of dimensions or of ad creatives worked very well? Do you have like do this education? Because I really like this video that I saw on your website, like always with this comparison, how expensive an app is, and also that a website doesn't bring you anything like as a creator. Were these like unique like creatives that came out over the years that went very well, or what was like your winning formula over the years for the ad creatives?
Good question. I think it comes down to a few different, like pulling a few different strings together. None of which, by the way, is like me or anyone on my team being a genius that just comes up with it from scrap. partly testing. So one is like what I said in the beginning is look at what other people are doing that is successful and model that, figure out why it's successful and model it. So a good example there is like our very first ad was me trying to be like a genius. And I thought, okay, I've got a cool idea. I took one of these like head scratchers. Do you remember these things? They have a handle.
Yeah.
Put it on your head and it makes you feel amazing. So I picked up one of these things. I picked up my phone. And I filmed myself saying like, this is how good it feels to launch your own app, right? That was my first ad. And it completely flopped. It had like a crazy high cost per lead. And I went, okay, no, don't try and be the genius. And I looked at what was working and I found Sam Ovens had this ad at the time that was like, it started with a picture of him with a weird hat on that said like, and it was with this really attractive woman and it said, what's the secret? And you're like, that's grabbing attention, right? What's the secret? And then it's like, that he shared with all these people that made him this much money, that blah, blah, blah. So he had this format for the ad. We just copied the format. Yeah. We didn't copy the content, but the format. And it worked 10 times better than this stupid head scratcher thing I came up with. So thing number one is like model what works. Thing number two is the moment that Preston bought our first customer, I phoned him and I said, what did I say that made you want to buy? Right?
Cool.
He said, oh, you said this and this and this. And that became the first breadcrumb, right? The first breadcrumb where I went, okay, I'm going to take that. I'm going to put that in the next training. Someone bought in the next training, Laura. Picked up the phone, Laura, what did I say that made you want to buy? That's the next breadcrumb. So the second thing is like speak to your customers all the time. And then the third thing is it's partially speaking to customers, but it's like we get a ton of comments on ads. We have like our community, we see what our competitors say. So it's a lot about just like seeing what's really resonating in the market and like what wording people are using and all that sort of thing. So I guess it's like speaking to, but it's more like observing what's happening.
But I love the idea to call the people and really ask for like the ideas or the arguments or the things that you said that made them to buy at the end. Because I think in most cases as a marketer, it's always wild guessing. And if you just talk to the people, you get like the real data. And this is something that I really will, I think I will test also because I wouldn't know why people book an appointment. It's always like, you have an idea what it is, but really to call the people and to build your marketing around that, that's really, Dan being a genius. Love it.
And if you can teach people who don't buy, that's great as well, because then you say, why didn't you buy? And then what's crazy is they'll often say, oh, because it doesn't do X. And you're like, what? It does. But you didn't explain it well enough, right? And so, this is good. And do it as quickly after the presentation as possible if it is a webinar or whatever, because then the wording is in their head. And
otherwise, they would forget it, right? Next day, they wouldn't have it on top of mind. But you were really like, this is something I think people are always like this, or do we do like image ads or do we video ads? But from what you explained, you were really like fast invested into doing video ads. And when I see your stuff today, I'm also like, you really have like a cool look and feel and also very cool video ads. Was there like a strategic decision behind there, or did you just saw like different video ads that were working very well and you just modeled them?
A little bit the latter. I have to say we already had the agency where we already had a video editor, so it made it easier for us to create video ads already. The other thing I maybe forgot to say it before about pulling the strings together is, of course, like your own results, right? Another example of like, we just found that the phrase, I can't remember how we came up with this. I think it was it was almost like a typo or something in the beginning, but the phrase "your own app equals freedom?" question mark, like your own app equals freedom. It's not even grammatically correct. But this, I don't know, combination of words, and it was so short, just like worked. You could put it on anything, and it just like worked better than if you didn't have it on that thing. So always following the breadcrumbs of performance as well. And yeah, we now that we're bigger, we have thousands of video creatives, and we have quite a complex system on how to actually analyze ads, that we can analyze the hook, the headline, the call to action, and on image ads, we can also test the hero image, the headline, and a few other elements of it. And we can pull together, you know, there might be five ads that have one thing in common, and actually all those five worked, but you didn't realize, unless you look at the data, that it's actually that one thing in common that's really helping the performance. So that's a bit more advanced, but
Yeah, I can imagine, but this is, that's really interesting. I think if you get these data over the months or over the years and really put together like the puzzle and create like the perfect ads where you get like the most ROI on these ads, that's really, really cool to hear. And I think video ads also, not a lot of people, I think, have a lot of self-esteem to do them. And I think if you do it really good and you have like the video editor and stuff like that, you really can stand out in comparison to other formats. If you look back, like, I don't know, how many customers do you have like today from your learnings, from starting from your first king who bought? How would you do, like, what would be the shortcut today to get to this level again? Like, I don't know, Dan, your company is gone and you have to start over and have to bring a software company again to this level. Would you do it like in the same order with the same funnels, or would you do something differently?
If I was starting in 2023, I think it is different than when we started in even 2019, 2018, when we started running ads for the software. It's got more expensive, it's got more difficult, the competitive landscape has changed. I think if you ask me like what mistakes did we make, I think we underinvested in brand. A lot of companies overinvest in brand and they think like, oh, we'll just do something really beautiful and everyone will just come flocking to us. And we didn't want to make that mistake. So we were like, no, screw that. And like, honestly, for the first like 3,000 customers, we barely had a website, right? Like if you went to passion.io, you'd be like, what is this weird blog? Everything was hidden in funnels, right? So we really, really underinvested in brand. And I think that we're still a bit haunted by that today, because we are actually by numbers the number one app builder for creators. But there are probably a few players that are perceived as bigger because they invested more in brand. And that, of course, helps them with direct traffic and word of mouth. And then that brings down their customer acquisition cost. And then it gives them like a competitive edge on how to scale. So I would invest more in brand if I was starting tomorrow, I think.
That's really interesting to hear, because I have the feeling that the people that have longest time in their life done like performance marketing are always coming to this conclusion at some point, damn, we have to do something brand and organic. And the people that have done like organic for the longest time, and I think I calculate myself to that, I'm always like, well, I got to do more performance. And I think when we talked before, you were like, yeah, okay, what's your numbers with this funnel? Like, and I was I was ending the call with you and I was like, huh, maybe I should have a closer look to the numbers after all. Dan has a point there. Yeah. And it's really cool to see that this is something that you realized. Who are the biggest players in your market? Is it someone like Kajabi, or who is doing the same offer? Because I wouldn't know anyone that does like almost the same thing as you.
Yeah. And that's Most people don't, to be honest, because yeah. it is still an industry in its infancy. I have to say, there are competitors popping up left and right, and most of them look very similar to Passion, and so they're very much learning from us in the way we learn from others.
You are now the guy who gets modeled. Yeah, damn.
It's happening. It's definitely happening.
Yeah,
some are modeling, and that's great. Others more into copying, but you know, that's
copying,
okay.
Yeah.
So in terms of competitors, I mean, look, there's the big old, like we call them the kind of legacy players like Kajabi and Thinkific and Teachable, yeah. and they're really focused on online courses and knowledge entrepreneurs. And you don't get your own app, and you do often get your own brand, but only partially. And the mobile is always branded like with their own brand. We are really focused on like mobile first, branded apps. Mm-hmm. And, in that space, there's like Mighty Networks. There's one called Uscreen. There's one called, Vimeo have Vimeo is obviously a huge company, but they have something called OTT, which is like, a product they have on the side where you can launch your own app. Yeah. So there's a few players, and there's some smaller ones as well, popping up all the time, but, it's early.
I assume there are not a lot of people that like play performance marketing like you do, or do they no. also know how to do that stuff?
No, but they've invested more in brand, and so there's okay. there's pros and cons, you know. But also a lot of them are heavily funded, and so I have to say, like, if you can crack something that's very capital efficient way of getting customers early, and you can invest that money in building the thing and making it better, then that's a big competitive edge. And I think we're the most capital efficient in the market.
I mean, I will never forget this. I think it was a vlog of Russell from ClickFunnels, and he was like, I think they were hitting the numbers of Infusionsoft. And he said in this video that this was really their advantage, that he still kept going, launching funnels by himself, and was not this management guy that didn't know how to acquire a customer on a profitable basis. And I found this so interesting, because this hero story was also so attractive. Like, we are fighting against these companies that are funded with like millions, not even like, I think, billions. And they took over the market by storm because they know how to acquire a customer that these huge companies never learned, I guess, right?
Yeah. Yes. And the best marketers, no matter how like big or senior they get, in my opinion, are always able to do that. I spoke actually yesterday to the head of marketing of Typeform. She, Patricia, she's an unbelievably talented individual. And she can do performance marketing, brand, content, PR, events. She can run all of that stuff herself. And she has like a great team around her who does various things, but when there's like a big initiative that needs to, a big new innovative thing, she like drives it herself. And she does a fantastic job. So
she
jumps
into the campaigns. She can do like creatives and stuff.
Yeah. Ooh.
And I think this is maybe really like the war of talents with like these software companies, I guess, because these online marketers, I think, especially in Germany over like 5 or 8 years that I'm in this market, I think I met like everyone. I think I'm really at this point that you drop a name and 5 other people say, oh, I met him, he's a great guy. And I'm like, oh, the loop is some kind of closed.
Yeah.
And it's crazy that it's such a skill set that is so unique. And I think on an international level, there are some more people, but not like millions of us, right?
Yeah, it's hard. So Patricia spent 15 years at IBM learning like every single arm of marketing, and they I think they put her through school and whatnot, and then she went out into the world and then you've got like the Typeforms of this world who are after Crazy. Talent like that, right? So it's tough to acquire talent that strong.
Yeah, I have 2 topics that I'm super interested. You said that you want to invest, and I think you already invested some more money into brand. What are your like learnings after the first months? How do you even approach this? Are you like, okay, we invest more, we do more content, we try to set it up, but is there also this performance Dan who is like, what are we tracking here? What are we looking at? Do you have some metrics or something that you're looking at?
Yeah, I mean, our goal is to drive a higher percentage of our new customers direct, meaning they're not attributed to a performance marketing channel, but rather no channel, meaning they've heard about us through a friend or they, I don't know, watched some content online and just Googled it. So that's the main KPI, but that's a lagging indicator, right? So how do you drive that? You look at like the leading indicators. We've also looked because we already have an asset, which is the performance machine or engine, we've looked at ways of kind of like, first of all, supplementing that. And so to give you an example, we run most of our ads on Meta. And up until honestly 6 months ago, you would see this ad from passion.io or from Passion Dan, and you would click it. But if you'd click on the profile, it would take you to a profile that no one had posted on for like a year. And that's not building trust, right?
Classic. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And so we said, okay, as a first investment in content, let's just produce content for Instagram and Facebook so that when people go from the performance marketing where we're already running, getting eyeballs, it adds some trust and improves the conversion rate of this, because then ROI focused Dan thinks, okay, there's an ROI to this content. Even if it doesn't, you know, grow our audience or drive new customers, it's going to increase the conversion rate of the stuff we're already doing. So we're trying to think a little bit through that stuff. And in the meantime, because it's always a case of like spinning plates, like doing it plus building the engine at the same time, we've been growing the team. So we now, for the first time, have like a brand and content squad of like 6-7 people with different skill sets and backgrounds. And we now have a head of brand growth. And so we've just got to the point where we now have some people to actually do this stuff, because it was just me for some time.
Yeah. Oof. Yeah. Pretty impressive. Are you sometimes looking back and saying like, it's pretty impressive what you've built, or are you like, what's the next chapter for you and the company?
I think this isn't going to be very aspirational. So if anyone's thinking
you're a guy too. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So if anyone's thinking like, oh, I'm going to be like really happy when I build up a $10 million business. So look, for me, I think I've been doing this now 6.5 years, so almost 7. And I think I've never felt like I've arrived anywhere. And that's also because we have invested every penny we've made back into the business. And therefore, you know, it's not like a lot of people build up these kind of information businesses. And once they hit 7 figures and certainly 8 figures, they are just like they're set for life, right? They can chill.
Yeah.
So we've invested everything back into the product. So it's a real long play and it's a high risk game. And it probably won't turn to nothing now because we're big enough that like, you know, but
it's still, it's a kind of gamble.
It's still a gamble. It's still a gamble because it could be the next Shopify. It could also be like that we're acquired by some company. And by the time all of the investors get everything and whatever, it's like, not the biggest thing. So I'm always like, okay, we need to get further faster. And you know, I'm really proud of what we've built in 6.5 years. And then someone like Jasper.ai comes along and we know the team there. And in 2 years, they're a $1.5 billion enterprise value. And you go,
and you're like, damn.
Yeah. You go, okay, you started later. You overtook us in like 2 months. And then you just raised 150 million. Okay. And so, you know, there's always a bit of like, there's always a bit of comparison as well. And that's not the healthiest thing, but that's my truth for you there.
I think a lot of people that are seeing that or listening to that can relate to that, because I think most of the people really like to think ahead and think what's like the next milestone. And it's cool to see that you still playing this game with like having the risk that you don't know how it like ends. As long, I think, if you enjoy the work and as long as you enjoy the projects, I think you're okay. Do you have like a plan to, I don't know, to hit at some point, I don't know, 100 million and maybe along the way something happens? Are you like having a long-term vision in this area, or is it like really we're trying to exit it at some point, or is it really like we try to keep growing and see what happens?
The main thing that's exciting for me is like the product vision of creating the ability for people to solve that problem I talked about earlier, that people can really earn money doing what they love and they have like an amazing product at their fingertips, their own brand, their own, they can monetize their own individuality. That to me is like so exciting, and we're so far away as a, not just passion, but as a global community, we're far away from that being the reality, I think, still. But I think it's going to happen. So that's the thing that I find really exciting. The second thing I find really exciting is that like this is like a really long game of chess where you're also learning the rules as you go along, and the rules are changing. And it's like, it's such a crazy journey, which I think is really cool that we get to do that, and how much we learn and grow along the way. That's probably where I am more proud, is like when I go, wow, I didn't know this 2 years ago or whatever, and what will I know 2 years from now? And then building something big, like commercially big as well. Like money is like oxygen, right? You need money in your business, and the more you have, the more you can do. And so like building something where if we could get to like $1 billion of ARR, like imagine what you can do with that, what you can create. It would be insane. So
that's love it. It's like world domination plans. I love that. Yeah. Can you share a little bit, like if we're going to the end of the interview, can you share a little bit how your daily life or struggles or projects look like today, what your head is focused around right now? Because I can imagine maybe if you have your team with branding, maybe they're like set up and doing like a good job. You have your funnels that are working right now. What are like your projects that you're thinking on right now?
Great question. So there's a certain part of my time which is like kind of like leadership and management. There's a certain part of my time which is about like and then a certain part which is about like moving bigger projects forward. So I'll give you like this week what my priorities are. One is that we want to go more into JVs, joint ventures, and find people with audiences who can promote passion. So kicking that project off, building a list of potential partners, and then contacting them. The second thing is we want to launch new paid channels. And so starting to research which paid channel is going to be the one where we have the highest conviction that it would work. I'm not completing all these things this week, but it's a few things I'm starting to work on. Then the third one is like more about around pricing and packaging, and how do we monetize, how do we increase LTV basically through what we include in different packages, and how we upgrade people and move people through the funnel and that sort of thing. So that's kind of the bigger swings that I'm working on right now. And yeah, it's probably half my time working on the big swings and half working on management stuff.
Yeah. I'm happy to hear that, because I think it's also the struggle keeping operations going and doing leadership and giving the team like everything that they need while thinking about these strategic projects that you have to do to keep the company going. And I think joint ventures, I'm excited how that works, because I think it could be really, really interesting to get new people with like warm audiences into your app. Yeah. Dan, thank you so much. For anyone who's listening and wants to monetize their being a creator, where does he or she has to go to learn more about you?
Yeah, so just go to passion.io, and we've got a lot of resources on there, case studies. That's always the first question people ask, like, can I see an example? So we have case studies. We have the webinar, which is basically where I walk through how to launch an app, and then you get a special deal at the end and stuff. So yeah, check it out, or just follow me on Instagram or TikTok or whatever you want.
There will be a lot of organic content right now, right?
There's a lot of organic content right now teaching. We want to be the thought leader for, we want to be the go-to hub for creators to learn how to engage and monetize. So we create a lot of content around how to be successful as a creator.
Love it. Love it. So everybody who's listening or watching, check it out. And thank you very much for your time, Dan.
Thank you.